Hello, thanks for tuning in to Learn, Grow, Succeed, the leadership podcast with me, Tom Hallett. This podcast is all about providing you with insights and tips to help you on your journey towards exceptional leadership. Hello and welcome to the Learn, Grow, Succeed podcast. And I'm very happy to be back on. I've had a little hiatus, but I am Tom Hallett, and I love doing the podcast. But I'm with my usual partners in crime. Please introduce yourselves.
Hello, it's me, Natasha Freeborn. I'm back, making myself a regular contributor to this podcast.
I'm Alex Dinage, and I'm still here.
Yeah, what do you do, Alex?
I contribute somewhere, little and often. Less is more. That's my approach.
I jest to all the listeners out there, Alex does the most hard work to this. Natasha and I turn up with a little bit of prep, but mostly the prep is reading all the work that Alex has done in prep for it. So, Alex, this is your baby. We are simply guests in this space.
Create. So, therefore, by doing all the work beforehand, I can take a back seat and just relax.
Absolutely. You also, you know, you hosted the last one, didn't you? Where we had the lovely Joe Espana joining us, talking about high performing teams. And we're going to continue on that theme this week. But we're not going into the kind of theory. We're talking about practical examples this week of, you know, what teams do we think are high performing and why? And we're going to try and draw out some of those characteristics that you see in all high-performing teams, and to try and kind of bring it to life, and where hopefully, I guess, as you're listening, think, yeah, I've got this in my team, or we can do more in this area, or whatever. That's the plan. Or we might just end up talking about how lovely sports teams are, one or the other. We're also going to try and not just do it on sports, because we like sports, but not everybody does. So, diversity is a key component of a high-performing team. So we'll try and do that. So who are we going to put on the spot? Who wants to go first? Who wants to vote for their highest performing team?
Do you reckon we should add some suspense and pause for the jingle?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the jingle. You can tell I'm rusty. Right, let's pause for the jingle while we decide who gets to go first. Right, so we're going to get into it, and we're not going to start with a sporting team. I think there is a lot of value in exploring sporting teams, because you can see the characteristics coming out a lot. Millions of people watch it and you can see them coming out. But that we're going to try with something a bit different. So I was looking around my office that I'm sitting in, and I've got a few things on my walls. It's my little man cave. And there is a theme that comes out, and for many people don't know that I spent 10 years before Excel working with air forces around the world. So I'm a little bit of an aeroplane geek. So on one wall, there is a calendar with the red arrows on it. And on another wall, there's a picture of a Typhoon aeroplane, which is a frontline military aircraft. Now, we're not going to get into the ins and outs of the military. So maybe we stick with the red arrows here. But my vote is that is an exceptionally high-performing team. And I don't know, how do you want to do it? Shall I tell you why I think they're an exceptionally high-performing team? And then you can debate it with me?
Yeah, go on then.
Sounds like a plan.
I mean, I suspect many people will struggle to debate that they are a high-performing team when you can see the product. You know, they were one of the original fast jet display teams. When they actually do their displays for the world, you know, these jets are traveling at 500-600 miles an hour, and they are at times about 2 foot from wingtip to wingtip. So if you think that's, you know, from your ankle to your knee for on average, they are that close in the sky doing 600 miles an hour. If someone was that close to you on the M25, you'd be a little bit worried, let alone going at that speed, where if you do clip each other, it ain't going to end well. It ain't going to end well at all. But I want to kind of delve a bit deeper because that's just the end product of what you get from a much, 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 much bigger organization. So there's nine pilots, I think. Is it nine? Yeah, eight that fly with one spare. And that's the kind of the tip of the arrow. But behind that, you've got all these airplanes that need to be maintained. If they're going to fly that close to each other, they have to have complete confidence in their equipment. So therefore, I don't know the details, and if you're in the Red Arrows, you can correct me, please feel free. But on average, a squadron of airplanes will have 100, 150 people on the ground that look after those airplanes just to keep them flying day in, day out. That's not deep maintenance because, every few months they'll go away and be completely stripped and put back together. So let's say there's 140 people behind getting those airplanes in the air. You have so many moving parts because they travel all over the world. You then have the support from the rest of the Air Force to get them to different countries. So for me, that's pretty elite when it comes to teamwork. And if you go down the list of the characteristics of a high performance team, committed to a common vision, purpose, and identity. I mean, they have an incredibly strong identity. Having worked with the Red Arrows, they know their purpose. It is to put Britain on the map and highlight our skill and prowess as a nation. But, they're part of a vision for the RAF, but they're a part of a vision for the UK. You mostly see them flying over Buckingham Palace or over sporting events or whatever. So, it's a huge vision. It's about showing how amazing the United Kingdom is. And they're all united behind the king. The whole of the military in the UK is the ultimate commander is the king. So I think there's some strong visions and purposes there, and they want to be the best display team in the world. Goals and expectations, they have to be perfect. Right? There is no room for error. If one of them is 30 centimeters out on a formation, they will tell each other, they will hold each other accountable for that. And I've seen the briefings where they will pick each other up, and they're pretty brutal military debriefs. And they will, but that's the kind of the expectation. So that's another characteristic in there is holding each other mutually accountable, being aware of their weaknesses. If they're not doing something, they will set who sits where in the formations depending on their complementary skills. The level of this, the standard of performance again is the best. It's a pretty big one. And they have a lot of fun while they're doing it, going around the world. They do know how to party afterwards. But they spend a lot of time together, so they have to manage those interpersonal relationships. The engineers often get to sit in the back seat for the displays to help show the people that look after the airplanes the end product, and not just from the ground to feel it. So that is my nomination for an exceptionally high performing team and some of the reasons why. What do you think?
I mean, it's quite hard to argue. I'd almost feel like a terrible person if I was to argue that that's not a great example of a high performing team. I think I didn't know the whole 2 foot statistic. That's pretty crazy. I thought whenever I've seen them before, the distance between the ground and where they are, you always just assume that it looks closer and that actually they're probably about 2 miles apart. So it's pretty incredible that they're actually that close. But I suppose it goes to highlight as well, like you say, the kind of relationships that are so important because, you have to trust in the ability of everyone in that situation, especially like when you say if it goes wrong, it goes pretty wrong. It goes badly wrong. So yeah, I think that's one thing that highlighted to me in particular was that how important trust is in that instance, but also in a high performing team, because knowing that you can do all you can do, but also as well, other people you can trust in their abilities and trust in their intentions. Yeah, that's crucial to then achieving the end goal.
Thinking about it from the other side of it for just a minute, because I think, as Alex said, I don't know that anyone could argue they're not a high performing team. They are one of the best known high performing teams in the world. How often, I actually don't know the answer to this question. How often do they perform, I guess is the right word, do those demonstrations? Do we know?
I mean, I can hazard a guess, but through the summer months, quite a lot. And they will practice every single day during the display season. And they have, so they go out to Cyprus, I think, and they work up for, I think, maybe about 6 weeks. But to be at performance standard, they will fly almost every day.
Yeah.
And when they're at the front end of the season, you know, that'll be two, maybe even three times per day.
Well, I know they do birthday parties because the Queen had them at hers.
I'm just curious because there's a lot of time when they're not, doing those performances or demonstrations that they are preparing for them. They're spending a lot of time preparing and practicing. I'd be curious how you think that could or would impact how great they are if they had to increase how often they were doing that. How's that going to impact potentially their performance if they then have to do that same high level of performance far more often?
Yeah, it's an in interesting question. I don't know. I think the thing with something like that, you know, ultimately the actual display element is muscle memory. So the more they do it, I suspect this probably is a classic, probably a classic bell curve. The more they display, they get to an optimum point. But then if you do too much, performance will decline as physical performance declines. But also, you know, what you can't have in a team like that is any complacency creeping in. So having a team culture and that holding each other accountable thing where there is no space for error, I think would become harder and harder as if they did more and more. And also, you know, the airplanes break all the time. So then that 100 and whatever people on the ground trying to keep those airplanes flying, how do they keep those jets under more stress running? And again, without any room for error, they must hold themselves to the highest levels of accountability. And, you know, that must show an insane level of kind of team spirit and relationships. You know, they are a symbiotic machine. Without one person in that machine, it doesn't work. So it would test that, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. Like, because as I mean, even as you were kind of talking about the team as a whole, it's very, very clear. It's not just the people in those planes at that point in time. It's everyone in the wider team that's making it not just happen, but be as good as it is. If that, the frequency of how often they do that is to change, the team's going to have to change. Is it going to have to be bigger? How would that have to shift? But I think there's also a good argument there for understanding. What's the payoff there? Like, at what point do really high performing teams acknowledge, okay, we are high performing in our team in this kind of format, and if we want to increase that somehow, then, maybe we need to shift that a little bit. We need to think about our roles. We need to think about maybe adding people to the team.
Do you know what would be a fascinating conversation to have is, you know, I was saying in my pitch essentially how they have a huge common vision and purpose and identity. And I wonder, because I don't know, is what do they see? Do they see their common vision as promoting the UK, or do they see it as a team saying we just want to show that we can be the best and that that product's really, really cool? Like, at what level of thinking do they generate that performance from? Which I guess would be an interesting debate then to push into when you think about a business team. You know, you need aspirational visions to get people to push themselves, but a vision that is too aspirational or maybe too high level could also have a negative effect because you're like, that's too big. That's not really anything to do with me.
I suppose as well, that'd be where it's interesting to know what the kind of world of flying display teams is like. Is it highly competitive? because maybe that's where that comes from, you know. And I don't really know. I don't know how you judge how one's better than another, but I know obviously in business where, you know, you have direct competitors and things like that, that's a lot of the time where the drive comes from. And like you say, in that, if a lot of the drive is internal, then yeah, it could be quite difficult. But I don't know. I don't know a lot about that kind of realm. So I don't know whether they're driven by others. I don't know whether it's quite a friendly space or super competitive or what have you. But yeah, that'd be interesting to know.
Yeah, definitely competitive. Friendly, but competitive. Cool. So, who's going next? Top that.
Well, I don't know if I can top that. I can offer a different example. A high performing team that comes to mind, particularly for me, because I got to experience it. I was very lucky enough to experience it. Was a martial arts demonstration team that I was part of about 12 years ago, 12 or 13 years ago. And it was a small group of us. We were all based in Surrey, in England, where I was from. And we were put together to train and prepare for a competition that was happening out in the States at the time. And we definitely had kind of some interesting moments, as I'm sure anyone who understands kind of team development will be familiar with. Kind of five very different people being put together, and kind of creating this team, but also creating and preparing for this competition. But over a period of time, over the period of months that we worked together, I think it made a difference that we all got the opportunity to kind of have our say about how this group worked together, about what it was that we were going to do to perform really well in that competition. And then just spending multiple times a week, week after week, month after month, actually going through those practices and rehearsals and preparations together. Just spending that time together, I think, forms a really great bond. But also, we began to have so much more trust in each other because we could all see that everyone was really committed. No one would miss practice. Everyone would show up. Even when they weren't having a good day, they would put the effort in. And if someone messed up, I don't know a better way to say it, but everyone forgave them. You know, there were no grudges held when things didn't go perfectly because everyone could see. You know, they're still putting the effort in. Everyone's picking themselves back up. We're going to go again. And we were all so supportive of one another, that it made a difference to then how it kind of recommitted us, every single person in the team, every single time. And we placed second in the world. So that was
Second in the
probably a
world.
big part of it, I reckon. We all worked really, really well together. So I would say we made a pretty high performing team. So on the off, in the very unlikely event that any of them are listening, big props to me, Molly, Danny, Simon, and Michael.
I feel like I want to clap it in. Second in the world is pretty damn impressive.
That's mega.
Can I ask some questions?
Yes.
So do you feel like I can guess, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So do you feel like you were committed to a common vision, purpose, and identity?
Yeah, I think it helped that we didn't just have that. We all had the same goal. You know, we knew what competition we were going to. We knew when it was. So we didn't just have that kind of common purpose and goal to, I mean, ideally win, but generally do our best at that competition. But, you know, having a specific date and location in mind of this is where we're going to go, we're all going to travel there, we're all going to do our best at this competition, it really focuses you, I think. I think it really focuses everyone on the team because you can become really, really single-minded about having that one common goal.
Yeah. And did you, aside from the kind of the physical element of it, like did you sit down in a and discuss this? Or did you have a coach who helped you unite behind that goal, but also that kind of broader kind of purpose and identity as a team?
Yeah, so we had a coach who was basically helping us prepare. And what I think worked really well was it was a bit of 50-50. So it was kind of 50%. He was there. He was coaching us on what we needed to do, what we needed to focus on, and helping kind of refocus us. But then the other 50% of the time was the five of us just going away and talking about it amongst ourselves. So it's not like there was this one person just telling us what to do all of the time. We also had a team, as a team, like had the autonomy to say, how are we going to work together? What do we think we should put into this? And how are we going to do that? How, like,
Yeah.
how are we going to make that happen?
Did you in those conversations, did you ever like write it down, or was it just something that you kind of all said and agreed?
I don't know that we ever wrote it down, you know. I think it was more one of those, like, we had a conversation about it and just sort of all looked around at each other and went, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it would have hurt to have written it down. I don't know that it would have occurred to us at the time either, though.
Well, and I get, and the reason I ask is because I guess there's obviously all sorts of different teams. You know, I'm talking about the broader aspect of a team of 100 plus people, whereas you've got, that smaller number and for a defined period of time. So I think it's slightly different. You know, if you want a team to become high performing but maintain it, that's, I don't think it changes any of these characteristics of a high performing team. However, I think it does change maybe how you approach some of them. You know, if that team then, I don't know, a year later was coming on to another competition or whatever, did you then maybe writing it down might have helped? Or if you had, I don't know, a backroom staff, physiotherapists, and all the other people that kept you going that weren't there in those team discussions to get a broader team that sat behind you, that's when I think maybe writing things down, so that people can get behind it when they're not in those conversations becomes more powerful.
Yeah, for sure. And I think if it was one of those things where we were going to continue working together over a longer period of time, that would have been a necessity, I think. I was on another similar team, but it was much, much bigger. It was sort of 15 or 20 people, and it just didn't have the same vibe, because once you add more people, it doesn't, you know, you need a lot more clarity. And I think that's the kind of thing that, particularly if it was over a longer period of time or if it's a bigger team, it's not quite the same to just all look around the room and go, yeah. You know, you do need a little bit more of that specifying, clarifying, and having it written down.
Interesting, very interesting. I was going to run down some of the other characteristics and see how you did them, but you know, I think they're probably quite obvious. You know, you talk about those conversations and sharing information that directly adds value to each other, and I presume as you set up how you approach the competition and things, you look to people's strengths and weaknesses, set people's standards of performance, and shared that information openly and freely. That is a massively, massively leading question, but is that true? Am I making a big assumption, or is that something you can reflect on and think, yeah, we did that?
Yeah, I would say we did. I think it was, there was, I think there was like a baseline level of understanding and trust, because everyone in the team was already a black belt in the martial art. So we knew when someone got feedback from someone else, or when someone was saying, you know, we all need to do this better, or hey, Natasha, you could improve on this. We all knew that everyone was coming from the same place, everyone had the same goal, but everyone also had that very base knowledge of, you know, someone else knows what they're talking about. So we can hold each other accountable in a way that we're all on the same level. You know, okay, I might be a first Dan and Danny might be a fourth Dan, but essentially, like, we all know that we know what we're talking about. So we have that baseline level of understanding and respect and knowledge, and we can hold each other accountable and yeah, definitely do all of those things.
That piece there about, I guess you almost, when you formed the team, there was so much respect there because of all that. You knew you were elite by having that black belt. And it's happened that in this team, it was all of in a martial art, that's when feedback becomes so much easier because you can pick up on the minute details on people because you know that if someone's got to where they are, like to that level of performance individually, the feedback become, they're going to welcome feedback as a gift, to use the cliche, as opposed to getting offended. And I guess it's an interesting point about saying you can. I think Alex's example is a team that maybe the sum of the parts was greater than the whole. Is that the right phrase?
Less the oh, hang on. The result was greater than the sum of the parts.
Yes. I think your example, which we'll go on to now, is going to be that. Whereas, but I think having elite people in a team in their fields is also exceptional. I don't know what my point is here. But if you have mutual respect for what everybody does, whether that's because they're as good as you at something, but have certain expertises. Or, like in the Red Arrows example, the pilots respect the engineers because they do something that they can't do, but they know they're amazing at it.
Yeah, I think there's a level of like you need that kind of personal trust and psychological safety in that team, but there is that level of you're kind of pre-vetted like professionally, like I'm gonna have a level of trust on that professional level because I know your stuff.
Yeah, like that mutual respect, and I guess that's one easy way to do it because there's a qualification there. But I guess if we'll if anyone's listening to this and they're in a team where there isn't something so clear, as an individual, how do you support a team to become high performing? Well, I guess it is showing how good you are at something. It helps, gain people's respect. Alex.
Well, I think that was really interesting getting a perspective from what it's like to be a part of a high performing team. I've strayed away from that. I wasn't part of this team because I was 8 years old. But it was this when I wrote this blog, this was actually the first example that came to mind. And that's because I'm gonna, it's about football, but if it starts to get a bit too specific or whatever, just put your hand up and I'll kind of refrain back from going into the nerdy football knowledge part of this. But I wrote about the Greek football team of 2004, which sounds super niche, but they are possibly the biggest footballing fairy tale of all time, potentially. When they went to the European Championships in 2004, they'd only played in two major tournaments before and never won a game. And then to be at the tournament, I think I've heard somewhere that they had a clear goal and a clear vision, which was to win one match. The kind of expectation beyond that was that they would just show up, lose to better teams, and then go back home, tail between legs. But they didn't. They actually went on to win the whole thing. Which completely unexpected by everyone. Obviously that it's kind of it was unexpected. It was never obviously going to be impossible. Everyone on that team was a professional. However, as that kind of phrase that we just said a minute ago, the sum of the parts was much less than what they actually ended up achieving. It's one of those things that shows the individuals on paper, looking at almost every other team in that tournament, you would have said that they're probably the worst or second to worst team out of all of them. But as a collection with strategy, with good tactical planning, with alignment, they became the best team at that tournament.
So 20 years later, does the world know what the difference that made the difference was?
So again, without getting into kind of specific tactical things that maybe a lot of people won't be interested in. The main thing that, and there's a really good film actually about it called King Otto, which is about the coach Otto Rehhagel. His plan was always about if I don't have maybe what a lot of other teams have, the resources and things like that, then I've got to tap into the strengths that we do have, which is great determination, fitness, and actually defensive ability. So what they decided was, depending on the situation, they would adapt their plan to nullify the opponent. So it was never to appear to be better than the opponent or to look better than the opponent. It was to take the opponent's strengths, work out a way in which to turn them into potential weaknesses, and to try to win a game. But it's also as well, 20 years later, people always call them the underdog that everyone wanted to see lose because they were just so like you want to, you go if you go into a football team, a football game, and you're looking at all these amazing players on the pitch, you're like, I can't wait to see them play, can't wait to see them play. But this team made every good player on the pitch look terrible because they were just so good at defending. And yeah, a lot of people said watching them was like watching paint dry, but they did the unexpected, so I suppose it's worth it.
So I guess it's, prime example of the they were aware of their complementary skills and they utilized them exceptionally well, and they recognize their weaknesses and they minimize the impact of them on the performance. That's two of the 11 characteristics of a high performing team. But though they're the ones that really sort of jump out and said they did them to the extreme, and that's how they achieved it.
Yeah, and it also it's a really good example of the kind of alignment piece because right at the start, before the tournament even happens, Greek football is really kind of divided by clubs. There's huge rivalries and stuff, and that reflects in the players. They're not all kind of they don't prioritize the national team, whereas the coach decides to make that a priority from the go. Everyone here needs to basically fight for the shirt, battle for the shirt as if they'd never done before. And that kind of brought everyone together to then be able to achieve the tactical plans and to
Yeah.
do everything that came afterwards.
And then you're back to characteristic number one, committed to a common vision, purpose, and identity. So clearly, there is some mileage in these characteristics to have such a dramatic effect. Oh, really interesting examples as well, like mine of the Red Arrows being something that's been honed over decades now, Natasha's and yours, Alex, being examples of where. In a short burst of time, these can arguably be more powerful to have a very immediate impact in a team, in your examples. Whereas you utilize them, I think, probably in a slightly different way to have sustained high performance, which is something that I hadn't really thought of before I came into today. So if there's one thing I've got from today is how you can differentiate between sort of how long a team might be together and how you utilize these things. Awesome, thank you. I found that interesting. I hope anyone listening, you find that a little bit interesting. There is a page on our website dedicated to high performing teams now. We're always up for a chat on it. And going through these characteristics is what's the word I'm looking for? There's a survey, right, on the website now, Al.
Yeah, there's an interactive quiz where you can see where your team ranks in three categories that are based off of the characteristics. So it helps you gain a bit of sight as to where those areas of development might be.
So if you want to be the next 2004, was it, Greek national football team,
Well remembered.
then go in, have a go at the quiz. It will get the brain box moving, and then give us a shout and we'll happily have a chat with you about it. So any other plugs we need to make before we finish, Al?
No, I think that's yeah, I think that's good.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening. It's a pleasure to be back. Thanks, Natasha. Thank you, Alex. And speak to you next time.